Hello, welcome to NC Asian American Ministries Podcast. My name is Sammy Ju and I'm your host. Today is episode 3 with Zach Lyons. Hello, Zach, how are you?
Hey, man, glad to be here with you.
Yeah, thanks so much for sharing about your ministry. That was exciting. That was a very exciting story. In this final episode, I want to hear more about your future visions for immigrants and their descendants for the Great Commission. So my first question is, what are the potentials for next generation immigrants to advance God's kingdom?
Yeah, that is a large question as well. I think that one of the advantages that that second generation immigrants or third culture individuals have in the work of the kingdom is they when they left their home context and entered into a host context, especially those that have migrated here to North Carolina, they're not only entering into the majority host context, but they're also bumping up against any number of other minority groups. And so they're picking up cultural cues and innuendos and parts of language and parts of understanding different groups as they all sort of bump up against each other. And as they bump up against each other, they're also changing and shifting a little bit themselves while others are changing and shifting a little bit as well. And so one of the things that comes to mind with this question is the call to that Paul makes to become all things to all men, that by all means I might gain some. And so for a second generation immigrant, I think that they, because of just the natural experiences that they've had, the third culture individual has the ability to, in an easier way, be able to make adjustments and adapt and in adaptability to be able to connect with people from a variety of different cultures and backgrounds. So if I think back to my parents, when my parents were missionaries, we worked with a particular group called the Beaufort people. And my dad used to say all the time, he would say, son, we're becoming Beaufort to the Beaufort so that by all means we might save some of the Beaufort. And then we worked with a different people group, the Walla people, and he would say, some were becoming Walla to the Walla so that by all means we might gain some of the Walla for Christ. And you know, actually, I think that being a missionary in that particular context, for my parents, that was actually a simpler way to go, in the sense that it's one place geographically, it's one culture, it's one language, and so you just have to tackle one group to be able to be effective in ministry in that particular context. But here in this context, the missionary who's probably not paid is probably a lay person who works a regular job and is engaging his community around him when he has time outside of family and work and church. That individual legitimately has to do what Paul did in the sense of becoming all things to all people. He has to, or she has to, move from this relationship with a Hindu to this relationship with a Muslim who's a Sunni to this other relationship with a Muslim who's a Shia to, on the other side of the street, this relationship with a Buddhist. And as he's engaging or she's engaging in gospel-centered conversations and relationships, he's having to communicate to and in a variety of different worldviews and ways. And you've got to be able to identify with these people. And so I think second generation, third culture individuals, I think because of the nature of having to be adaptable and learn to exist in multiple cultures through their development, it actually empowers them with some of the natural tools that become very intuitive for them that would be hard learned skills for someone that didn't have that experience. Not to say that someone couldn't learn, because I think they can, Somebody that lived in a rural area can learn how to live in the city. Someone that lived in a predominantly majority Anglo community can learn to live in a diverse community, mm-hmm. and vice versa. But I think someone who's a second generation, who's a third culture individual, just by virtue of the experiences that they have, may be able to navigate those waters more intuitively, mm. And without a lot of training.
Well, definitely there are a lot of potentials for them, but what keeps the next generation immigrants from living that potential?
Man, so one is not all of the second generation are believers. So that's one. You know, some are growing up as nominal believers themselves, so they're certainly not regenerate, they're not followers of Jesus. So that would be one reason I think that's there. Another reason, you know, the enemy doesn't want to see any believer, regardless of their background, engaged in the work of the kingdom. And so he's going to leverage anything and everything at his disposal to distract us from the work, to create division within the church that's gonna distract us from the work, to deceive us, to make us think that we should be giving our lives to something else that we think might be more important, like the American dream or money or the approval of our parents, or whatever it may be. I think the primary reasons are because we've lost sight of a solid understanding of eschatological end. We don't live every day in light of the coming of Christ. And I think that if we would help our people to begin to live in light of the coming of Christ, in light of that hope, but also that reality, that judgment day is coming, and the recognition. So that, helping them to live in light of the coming of Christ, see themselves in light of that coming, and as a participant in God's work between now and then, but then also give second generation, third culture individuals, give them an understanding of the heart of God. I think about what Peter says. He says that God, our Father, desires that none should perish. That's the heart of God. None should perish. If that's his heart, how do we impart that same heart to second generation immigrants, to all believers, regardless of, that's something that needs to happen in the church abroad, across the board, is to understand and capture the heart of God that none should perish. Mm-hmm. And so if we capture that heart, then that then begins to fuel a passion in us to join him in what he's doing. To say, okay, we're going to be about what God is doing in the work of his kingdom until he establishes his kingdom, mm-hmm. here on earth, when Christ returns. And so I think the reality of what's to come not only provides us hope, but it also gives us urgency. And then the instilling in the heart of the believer, whether third generation, second generation, or second, third generation immigrant, or just any believer, instilling in them the heart of God, I think that then sets the motive of love for those who are far from him, and it allows them to be able to enter into God's work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the previous episode, you mentioned about the mobilizing churches to reach the people groups. How can mainstream churches partner with minority churches for the Great Commission?
Yeah, so how are we defining mainstream churches?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I'll try to give a definition, maybe. Mainstream churches, the majority, so there's a lot of different types of churches that we have in North Carolina, and I can't necessarily speak to the whole of North America because I don't know. I know North Carolinians more than the rest of, the U.S. continent, but... I I would say mainstream culture, mainstream churches, I think you might be able to say predominantly Anglo, though not exclusively Anglo, African-American, but predominantly Anglo, English-speaking, very Western style, though there's various definitions of what that means within the Western mindset, but Western style church, post-Reformation church, mm-hmm. I think is what we're talking about there. Which makes up most of the churches throughout North Carolina Baptist life, right? We got churches across North Carolina, a few of which are very large, mm-hmm. and thousands plus members, and the vast majority, the normative church in North Carolina, the normative of the mainstream majority churches are, 100 to a few hundred people. Mm-hmm. So that's who we're talking about. First of all, I think it's really important for those individuals from the majority church to realize they can actually engage in this work. So sometimes I interact with folks in the majority culture, and they have the mindset of this of outsourcing the work. So here's what we need to do: we need to identify a Chinese brother to come in and plant a Chinese church in this community because we have Chinese people here. So their mindset, their idea of here's how we reach this community is, we go find someone to support, financially support, and bring into the work and to engage. Well, that's fine, well, and good, as long as there are believers from that particular people group that can be tapped, that are that qualify with the biblical requirements to be a church planter pastor, mm-hmm. to be able to are available to come to that particular community and to engage and start work among that community. But the problem is, there's a shortage of people
right.
from those communities that can actually do that work. And so, not only here in North America, but around the world. And so I think it goes back to something I said in a previous episode of this: every ordinary believer doing ordinary things with gospel intentionality. It's this priesthood of all believers. It's this recognition that when Christ has saved us and blessed us in Christ, He has blessed us to be a blessing. Mm-hmm. And so it's this recognition that when we are given the Great Commission, and He says, "Make disciples of all nations," that's something that He says to His disciples, and that means you as a disciple, that means me as a disciple. Mm-hmm. He's calling all of us, each of us, all nations. Mm-hmm. So regardless, we are charged with crossing whatever cultural or linguistic barrier or boundary, and however much effort or energy that requires, it's our opportunity and responsibility to do that. Mm-hmm. And so if that means that we need to learn a language to be able to do so, then right. we learn a language to be able to do so. Mm-hmm. If there is no one that is able to reach that group from within, then that's our responsibility to cross that cultural barrier, that linguistic barrier, to ensure that they hear and respond to the gospel. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we have brothers and sisters that come from among them that become right. a part of the family of God. And, mm-hmm. and then we can mobilize and catalyze them to engage others in the community. I actually had breakfast with a brother this morning that I got to hear his story. And he's an African-American brother from rural Alabama. And he, when he came up here, he started at Southeastern, and he got a job at a hotel, a local hotel. Mm-hmm. And early on, when he first started working there, he was like, "Why am I doing this? This is, this is just pointless." And but God had given him prior to that a real passion for Spanish speakers, mm-hmm. for Latinos, and so he realized he was on staff with them at this hotel, and everyone else on staff is Spanish speaking, so he gets every day at work, mm-hmm. he gets practice time. That's for great. Learning Spanish. Mm-hmm. Well, so he does that for 2 years, mm-hmm. And then after 2 years, he gets the opportunity to go for 7 months to serve in Puerto Rico, and gets to leverage his language there, serving for Puerto Rico. And then he comes back and does some schooling, and then he goes back again. He just got back from being there for 3 months over the summer using language. And he's talking to me this morning about what it looks like for him to be able to move there in the long term for at least 2 more years and possibly for a longer future than that. And so you just look at, this is an African-American brother, a part of the majority mainstream culture. He's a minority, but a part of the majority mainstream culture of our society and of our Christian culture especially. And God has given him a passion for the nations, a passion in particular for Latinos and Spanish speakers. And then he puts him in a very hard place in the middle of his schooling at work, where he's able to develop a particular skill set that now God is allowing him to be able to use in incredible ways, providing disaster relief and coordinating teams and doing all kinds of things alongside of church planting work in Puerto Rico. And so I think we just need more ordinary believers like that, that are living out their ordinary lives of going to work with that kind of mindset. Our minority brothers, I can speak from the majority in this conversation a little bit. So our minority brothers and sisters, I think they oftentimes feel undervalued, and it's as though they feel as though they're on display as the minorities among the majority group. And so they're an outsider to the rest. They don't feel as though they are a genuine brother and sister in Christ. And most of that is because of the way that we as the majority act and function with them. And the best thing that the majority culture can do is to humble ourselves and to treat our brother as our brother, to treat our sister as our sister, as equals, at understanding that they have knowledge for our spiritual good, that they have ways in which God has gifted them and given them the Spirit so that they can influence and shape us in our own spiritual growth, not just ways in which we can come alongside and serve them. And
it's the same principle from Philippians 2:5-8.
Exactly. Same thing. Exactly. I think so. And then the other thing is communication. And there are some books out there, some helpful books that can be helpful in communicating across cultures. Foreign to Familiar is a great book that you can read and that would be helpful for you. There's one that really started doing working me over, called Misreading the Scriptures Through Western Eyes, and it started revealing, even though I grew up in an Eastern context in West Africa, I still struggled to see the scriptures through the lens of an Eastern mindset. I think majority culture brothers and sisters, if I'm speaking to you, I'm saying, listen to our minority brothers and sisters. Let them speak in as well. Let them help, allow them to help in making decisions and wrestling with the bigger problems, and seek their counsel. I think there's a lot that we can learn from our minority brothers and sisters, and most of our education, most of our training has been in a vacuum in the West, and we need to be careful that we don't only listen to Western thinkers. So,
wow, that's great. Well, thank you so much for sharing. We're in this together. We have the same goal because we are God's children, and we are His servants. We're in this together. And some of our listeners are living in different countries. So I'm asking for you to join this endeavor, to have the mind of Christ, to humble ourselves, and to enter the lives of people around you, and share the gospel, disciple them, and multiply them, so that God's kingdom would be advanced. But in all of this, we should depend on God 100%. So this is not from us, but this is all from the Lord and for Him. So all glory to the Lord. Thank you, brother. Thank you so much for sharing your heart. And it's such a great honor and joy to be brother together and to work with you for God's kingdom.
Yeah, it's a joy to be with you today as well, Sammy. It's always a joy to be with you. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Listeners, if you want to hear more podcasts from us, find NC Asian American Ministries at your podcast, then subscribe it. You can listen to our weekly podcast update. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode.